to listeners, internet freaks, and folks all around the world. My name is Phil Parn. Welcome to the Blind Handyman for another exciting week. Here we are, all gathered in our little studios. We all have our
microphones in hand.
Something to drink. And
drinks in hand.
Don Shaw is here. Donald Shaw, how are you, sir?
That's right. How are you doing today?
How's your week been so far?
It's been great.
It has been. Don Patterson is with us. Don?
Still in the process of remodeling, so...
Don has new tools, Don is an accordion player. Most of you knew that, probably read his bio, don't you think? Most of folks do. He plays accordion and he has a new deal. What is your new, what is this thing called you bought? This
MidiVox 3, Excelsior MidiVox 3, 940 double music, double tone chamber.
If any of what is this box that you have that's worked with my
with a
keyboard?
That's a MIDI arranger.
Anybody that knows anything about a MIDI arranger?
WK2.
Could email us at
the
handyman.
We can use all the help we
can. We can't figure out. We got the piano working, and it really sounds good. Other than that, we hadn't done much. And Tom Houston is here.
Hello, hello.
Tom, who ordered a new computer and is going
impatiently waiting.
Patiently.
It's on the way, though.
On the way.
We shipped, shipped a couple of days ago, and it's he will, for a period of time, have the fastest computer of any of us.
About a month, I estimate.
My wife or Shaw or any of us.
That's right.
But at the rate they decline, it'll be obsolete by the time UPS gets here.
Exactly.
It will be the fact. It's a 1.4,
1.5.
Oh, mine's all a one. Right. Mine is a lame little 1.2.
It's the Athlon XP.
Oh, Athlon.
Athlon.
And that's the one that's not made by Intel, right?
Right.
AMD.
It's made by AMD. Right. Don is a computer expert, Patty. He knows all that.
I think it's the 1800. It's equivalent to the 1.53, I think.
Gigahertz. And if you know anything about that, you can email us because we
ought to be one fine computer.
And for me, because I certainly don't.
It ought to be a fine. I'll be glad it gets here. You've been overdue for that a long time. So anyway, handyman stuff. We want to talk today. Don, what do you want to talk about? Don, I think we're going to use your subject to kind of work.
Well, if time permits, today I want to talk about hot water heater problems. Either installing an Evament, or if that's not your problem and you got bigger problems than that, maybe installing the whole tamale, the whole hot water heater. So
did you have to do that at your house recently?
Not recently, but a few years ago at another house had to do that.
No,
so
I was going to say, because I just changed that over there before I moved.
This one's still in good shape.
So we'll get to that in probably the third leg of our show. We have a guest, a fellow named Charles Reichert, that we're going to talk with, that lives in some town in New York. I never can remember the town.
It is called Unadilla.
Unadilla. Unadilla. I guess if we're pronouncing that wrong, he can tell us. So we're going to call him on the phone and visit with him about. He's bought a house that he's restoring, and he's got all kinds of things to do with that. It has, I think it has a carriage shed or some kind of a outbuilding of some kind that he's restoring that. So we're going to do that, and we're going to read our email, guys. What do you think about that? Email time.
Okay. Good email.
Good email. We appreciate every bit of the email.
Yep.
It's blindhandyman.com. Let us know, please. Blindhandyman@hotmail.com. What is the address? Can I tell you what the address is?
blindhandyman@hotmail.com.
All right. And here we go with our very first email of the day. It's hello, you guys. I got a couple of relatively simple questions, as I'm not much of a woodworking guy or nut, he says. I've got a wooden deck that is in desperate need of refinishing. Is there something that I, as a totally blind person, could apply without sighted help for that purpose? Another problem is I have a toilet rack which has taken a dive. How would I be able to keep it straight if I need to drill new holes?
Towel rack.
Let's see. Yeah, a towel rack. What did I say?
Toilet rack.
A toilet rack?
I was trying to figure out what that was. I was fixing to email the blind handyman and see if they knew what that was.
That's right.
Okay.
A towel rack. Yeah.
I have not yet been to the hardware store. It is possible that I can get another of the same type where the mounting brackets go into the wall and the rack is mounted with set screws.
Mm-hmm.
As to mowing the lawn, I used to use a regular power mower, and it seemed to work okay if I mowed both ways. But the truth comes out. Now I hire a yard man to do it.
And that'll work.
Anyway, thanks for any advice. And this is from David McElroy, out in California.
What about this deck? I've never done that.
Well,
what?
The deck, if it depends. He said refinish, but I'm wondering if he means most decks are left in natural wood, assuming his wood is treated. Maybe he just means he wants to water treat it.
That's what
like,
I think.
I'm sure that's what he means.
Something like Thompson's water seal. And I understand we don't get any compensation from these people. That's just one. There's probably several brands that I'm not familiar with. And you could use just a regular pump-up sprayer. If you have like a 3-gallon little pump-up sprayer, and you can put it in there according to its directions, but I think you dump it right out of the can and don't dilute it. And you could just spray it, just saturate it. You can't really get too much on it.
I don't think you can. And those sprayers are cheap.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't cost much. You need one anyway because we're going to talk about exterminating eventually.
Right.
So
That's right.
And so I would assume that's what there are some polyurethane finishes that gets a little more complicated. And like I say, on your treated lumber, and I'm sure your deck is treated. It could have. And if it's been painted, you would probably obviously want to paint, and then there again, that may involve some sided, you know, if the paint's coming off and you need to scrape it, then you may actually need some help. But if it's just a matter of sealing it, your 3-gallon sprayer and Thompson's water.
There'd be no reason if we assume that he's totally blind, that you get down on your hands and knees and you get a roller and you just roll it on each.
That was the next thing I was fixing to say.
That's the way if I was going to do it, that's the way I'd do it. I'd just put it in a pan and
roll it on. Or mop it on. Buy an old disposable or buy a new disposable mop. Sponge mop.
Or buy a little cooking mop that they use, a little short-handled cooking mop that they use to mop. Basting mop. That's what I would use and just do each because you can't get, like Pat said, you can't get too much on it. There's no way to get too much. There's really no way to make a mess. I mean, it's going to drip down between the boards and onto the ground, or I guess if you had it upstairs deck, you...
yeah.
You can just do it. I mean, just get out there and do it, and the next time somebody comes by, ask them if it looks all right. If it doesn't, you missed a place, go catch up. Don't worry about it.
And then the day before, you need to either rent or get a power sprayer or get a nozzle, put on your water hose, wash it down real good, sweep it, and then wash it down, clean it real good first, real good. All the pine needles and all the junk off.
And clean it up and do it. All right.
Okay. What about this towel rack?
Well, he didn't tell us what
the
surface.
The towel rack. He said that if he's he wants to know how he could keep it straight.
Keep it straight, right?
And so what he would need to do there again is measure where the existing one is now, and then he could either cut a little jig. He could cut. I would measure from the ceiling down because we're assuming that the towel rack is probably chest high or higher. And so the shortest distance to that would be, I would measure on each side of that towel rack from the ceiling down and keep that distance, and then he could cut a 1x2 piece of board that length and then put it back when he's ready to mount his new towel rack. He could butt it up against that 1x2 as a jig.
In other words, use that 1x2 as a measurer, as a measuring stick.
To keep it level.
You could do that if you didn't have a level. You didn't have any other way.
If you didn't have an audible level, you could.
But, you know, if I had no tools and I was going to do that, I would get a piece of string and tie a key on the end of this piece of string and tie it on one side of the towel rack and drop it down till it touched the floor and make it do the same thing on the other side, and bingo, it's level. Right?
Yeah. It's 601. Like I say, a jig either to
any
the floor
kind of jig
rack or to the top.
Or the countertop or...
And his audible level, if you could fasten one side, and then you have your audible level.
Do that. That worked fine.
Just hold it up there. But he didn't tell us. I think it's probably come out of the surface it was mounted on. They make all kinds of things that go in to a, and we this is something we'll cover in another show, that go through like a piece of sheetrock, or that go in and then flare out on the other side, that you can make a way to put things in sheetrock. He didn't tell us what surface. Email us and tell us what surface this towel rack's on, and if it's made a big hole, we'll tell you how to fix it, won't we?
Yeah.
Yep.
Next.
Okay, all right. It says, hi all, my name is Walt, and I'm in Tacoma, Washington. You talked about changing the clapper valve, but what's the best way to adjust the float in the commode? Thank you. This is Walt Cohn.
All right. What do you...
Walter.
Anybody want to... I got an idea, but I'll wait. I'll defer to you, Donald Shaw. If you want to change the level of the float, how do you do it?
Well, if you've got the older type that with that's vertical, with the ball on the end of the rod or the float on the end of the rod, you could
horizontal.
Yeah, horizontal.
I get those confused.
You could screw it in and out. the little float on the end, and that will adjust the...
And that makes it shorter or longer arm.
Yeah.
The longer the arm, the higher it raises.
And if you can't really get it to level, you won't just bend the rod.
Right.
You ever do that?
Oh, sure.
I just bent, you know, if it was running, in other words, when it gets to the top of that little pipe, that is an overflow, and it'll run down that. I've seen them where it was running down that overflow all the time. I just bent the rod down a little bit so the ball, so the water got to the ball quicker, and bingo,
forces it up to the top, and that's it.
That's
of course,
it.
If you got the new kind
without the float,
yeah, then you got a different
setup.
Well,
there's a little rod that is vertically, usually, and on this little rod there is a little clamp.
Uh-huh.
And you have to squeeze both sides of it.
And it'll move back and forth?
And it slides up and down on that rod.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I'm not. So I have one of these. I just put one in, and I had to adjust my water. But I would be afraid to say if you go down, it makes more water, or less. I forget the direction. It's just sort of a trial and error. The best thing you can do is, determine approximately where the water level kind of used to be. And then you either go one direction and make a mark, and you may want to go back the other direction.
Yeah.
But this clamp is real difficult to move if you don't squeeze both sides. You're sort of squeezing top to bottom.
Yeah.
It's on this rod that slides, but you have to make sure you don't want to bend it, but you want to be sure to squeeze inward. Squeeze your two fingers together.
I've never seen one.
Well, those are the newest. I mean, anything you buy now, that's probably what you'll be buying.
Come over to your house and look at your commode, Pat.
Whoa, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. What's that? What else?
Okay. Hi. I emailed previously, and suppose you read the email during the show. I'm not able to keep connected long enough to hear the whole show to get many answers. I'm hoping the shows will be archived someday. Would you mind emailing the contact information for the Skill Saw Guide? I have a suggestion for the Blind Handyman website. Perhaps it could be housed on the ACB webpage. Please keep a resource guide available that can be updated to include new accessible tools.
Mm-hmm.
I have found an audible level that works well to be helpful. Mm-hmm. They are sold for people to level off their motorhomes or refrigerators. Please get back with me on the Skill Saw Guide. Thanks, Keith.
Well, I'll be happy to email him where I got the little one, the little 24 inches. Of course, Sears, that's available to anybody. You can order online. And the other one, I'm still researching the 8-foot guide. And once again, I will say, just remember back that it's kind of expensive. And it's kind of special order, but I will. I was going to have that information this week, and somehow I didn't. But I will.
How much was this Sears one that
Sears
you bought?
Sears one was like $39.95 or $19.95.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
But Sears is the source on that.
It's just the 24-inch. Yeah. I believe it was $39. It was fairly expensive for its little for what it is.
Yeah, but it's what it is.
Invaluable.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to rip a piece of plywood down the middle, 24 inches on either side, buddy, you got. It's the best
it's
way
the
to do
thing,
it.
It's the thing you need, isn't it?
Yeah. And so I
or, or if you wanted to rip 5 feet on one side, you could, you know, if you it's 4 feet wide. If you wanted to rip 3 feet, you just set it to 12 inches.
12 inches.
Cut
and
down
go.
And bingo. Right. You got,
and
so
bingo.
So Sears is the source on that.
On that, yeah.
Is that all, Houston?
Uh-huh. That's it.
Well, we did get one more email from this fellow in Iowa named the Snowman, Jim Snowbarger. Now, all of you are familiar with the Snowman, or most of you have ACB radio listeners. And I need to call him and see if he'd like to be a guest. He does handyman things, and he was interested in the Skill Saw Guide. And, of course, most of you know about the new book that the Snowman is currently working on that should be published soon. It's called Fun in the Barn. It's a rather bucolic setting, blind man, blind fellow, and in his bucolic element, working in his barn, and it has a lot of tactile pictures in there, some of them kind of obscene, but we won't discuss that. Anyway, Jim Snowbarger, thank you for the email, sir, and I found it. It was a flat screwdriver. I tried everything else, and finally a flat screwdriver fit the thing. Anyway, thanks, Jim, and we appreciate that. Shall we take a break and call our guests, guys? What do you think? Or you want to talk about, Pat, you want to talk about your kitchen? Talk about your, what were you going to talk about?
Well, no, I said if time permitting, and we can do it another time. We're going to do the hot water heater today. I am in the process of installing a vent hood combination and microwave and stovetop and oven, and so I'm going to discuss all of those connections because we're getting into some 220 wiring and where color means everything, and but it's really simple. And so we'll get some maybe next show.
Yeah, let's call our guest. We can talk about the hot water heater next show, too, if time permits.
So. Yeah, let's take a break, Houston, and call our guest, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Back in just a minute, folks. Isn't that wonderful bumper music? It reminds me of one of the old stations. Remember those stations that used to play songs at night? Classical at night.
Yeah,
Charles
night.
Remembers those. Charles Reichardt, are you there?
Yes, I am.
I'm not having any
Can you,
sound.
You don't have what?
I don't have any sound.
Okay, turn it off and then back on.
Don't know how.
Okay, let me fix on this radio.
Blind handyman.
How about now?
Yes.
Working?
No, it just went on.
Uh-huh.
How about
that?
Yes.
Are you guys fine? Are you hearing me yet?
Yeah, we're hearing you fine. Can you bring him? Is he loud enough for Houston?
Let's see. Say something else, Charles.
I just want to say good afternoon.
There you are.
Gentlemen, thank you.
Can you hear us okay?
Oh, just fine.
Hi, Charles. Welcome to the show.
Charles. I'm really happy to be on. I appreciate you asking me to be on. And I hope I have something to share for your listeners.
Well, we have Don Patterson here, Don Shaw, Tom Houston, and I'm Phil Parr. And first of all, tell me about your visual acuity. How much do you see any at all?
I don't see anything, and I've been blind since infancy. So I have actually, no visual references to rely on or to remember.
Do you mind telling us what your age, sir?
51.
So you fought the good fight. You've been at this blind stuff.
Been at it for quite a while, and plan to be doing so for a much longer time.
Yeah, but we're a lot closer to the end than we are the beginning, aren't we?
I guess so.
I'm 61. Tom is mid 50s, and Don Shaw just turned 50. He's the youngster of the group.
In September, I turned 60.
Don Pat will turn 60 in September. And so you live in, what's the name of your town again, in New York?
I live in a very small town in central New York called Unadilla, and it's northeast of Binghamton, a very tiny town, somewhat historic. We just celebrated our 200th, our bicentennial last year.
Mm-hmm.
And about the same time, my wife and I, my wife's name is Laureen, she's sighted.
Laureen, you say?
Laureen, yes. Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful lady. She's just tremendous, and she has a lot of interests of her own, as maybe we could talk about as we go along here.
Okay.
Maureen and I bought an old house in Unadilla last year, We married in the house, which added to its history, which was kind of neat. And the house is actually about 200 years old. The main portion of the house, I'd say about 60 to 70% of the house is of the federal style and was built in 1804. And then they added a Victorian addition on the back of it in the 1860s. And it's quite a large place, and I must say, with my interest in being a handyman and woodworking and fixing and fussing and all the rest, I have a perfect place to do all of that and to learn so much more than I already know.
You say the federal style. I don't understand that term. What is
the
that?
The federal style basically came into being after the Revolution, and it really, really consists of a central block, and it's very asymmetrical. It's very balanced. It has a wing on either side of the main block of the house, and then another wing off the back. So the house, in fact, someone asked me one time why I was buying the house, because they said it looked like a house of many blocks put together.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of what it does look like, with all the wings coming off of it. But it starts out with a central block where the with a foyer and the circular staircase and all the rest of that is, and then there were wings going off to the left, right, and forward from that point. But it's a style that that came into vogue after the American Revolution and through the early 1800s, and then it was superseded by, you know, some of the early Victorian and, you know, some other styles.
Now, has anybody done... any, for instance, have they, surely someone has come in and put a kitchen with kitchen appliances in
the
this?
House, the house has all the modern conveniences. Over the years, I would say that the kitchen has probably been redone many times over the 200 years.
Uh-huh.
And it looks probably nothing like it should at this particular point. In fact, when you walk into it, it looks like a, you know, a modern kitchen with, you know, a lot of country flair, but... Mm-hmm. But a very modern kitchen. It's got the modern cabinetry, dishwasher, you know, fridge with ice maker, you know, countertop range, the whole nine yards, built-in oven, you know, all that stuff. But once you get out of the kitchen, the rest of the house is, I would say, very much original, especially the federal portion or the main block with the two wings going off to the left and to the right. There's still plaster left. There's still the very wide plank pine floors. Of course, they've, you know, there's been updates, you know, with electricity and plumbing and so on. In fact, there's still a lot of the old knob and tube electricity in here, which you know, which we're replacing, and some of it already has been replaced before we got here.
Now,
so it has all the modern conveniences, but much of it was left alone. It's very original in very many respects.
Charles, a while ago you mentioned the fact that about the entryway and the staircase. Could you kind of describe the? I assume in snow country up there you have a real steep roof, and do on the upstairs do you have porches big?
The roofs are steep because of being in the Northeast, as you mentioned, the snow and all.
I think it.
The main block of the house has the peak of the roof, or the ridge of the roof, I should say, running from left to right, if you were to look at the front of the house.
I think so.
The wings on either side of that are set back just a little bit, but they're almost as tall as the main block, and their ridges also run to the left and right. Now, the Victorianish type wing
would have the porches.
Runs from... front to back. So the house basically, if you were to look at it from an aerial, it looks like a T.
Okay.
Like
okay.
And yes, the roofs are they're pitched quite a bit. In fact, we just had the roofs redone on the house. We had architectural asphalt shingles put on it, but we did find a lot of the original wood shingles.
Goodness.
Still around, and they had been underneath, you know, several layers of other asphalt shingles.
But you took all, you started over. You took all the roofs off.
We left the planking.
Yeah.
But we had to pull off the, you know, the wood shingles and so on. But the
planking
is there. Of course, all the framing in the house, except for the Victorian section, is is what do you call it? It's pegged, notched and pegged. You know, it's the post and beam construction. Mm-hmm. That's very, very interesting. I've learned a lot about framing just looking at that stuff.
I bet.
Now, this house is on cedar posts or piers and beams or what?
It's on cedar posts.
It is?
Yeah.
And
it has a laid-up stone foundation, and in the basement there are, there are big, sturdy posts holding up the place.
Well, I forgot about the fact that you have basements up there.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah,
what a deal. What a deal.
So, you want to tell us some, I'm sure you have plans. First of all, if you don't mind, tell us some kind of a little background on you. What are some of the projects you've tackled as a handyman? What are some of the things you've done?
Well, actually, it started out when I was a child. We have had woodworkers in our family for generations. We've had cabinet makers, home builders. My father built all the storm windows and screens for our home. You know, all that kind of thing. My grandparents, along with my father and a couple of uncles, built their house from scratch. So woodworking has always been in my family. My parents were also antique dealers for much of their lives, so they got involved in refinishing antique furniture. And that's kind of where I started. I used to go down in the workshop of our house when I was growing up and watch my father as he would either build a cabinet or refinish a piece of antique furniture. And I'd ask him questions, you know, hundreds of questions all the time.
So you learned at an early age how to brace?
At a very early age. And I also started fooling around with automotive-type projects then, too. I got a hold of a neighbor's lawnmower that didn't run, and I made it run. And I was only about 10 years old when I did that.
Neat project.
I did it from there. More and more lawnmowers and bigger engines, and then I bought my first car when I was 13. Fixed that thing up, and my family used it for a second car for I don't know how many years.
Yeah.
So I've always liked to work with my hands. It's kind of interesting how I ended up in the computer field for a good part of my life.
That's what I was going to ask you. What did you do to what was your gainful employment? What did you do when you worked?
Well, my vocation was as a systems analyst. I was with IBM for about 15 years. That after getting out of college with a master's in business, I ended up at IBM, started there as a programmer trainee, and then I worked my way through some levels and got to be a systems analyst. I developed carpal tunnel problems and ulnar nerve problems along the way, so my use of a computer keyboard right now is very limited. It's basically just to the hobbyist level or to the absolutely have to do type level, and that also affects my ability to work on some of these handyman projects around the house.
Really,
I have to approach things very cautiously. I have to work very slowly because of the pains in my hands. Although I've had the surgeries and such, it hasn't really alleviated a lot of the problem. So I have to approach things very slowly and carefully, but it doesn't stop me. I just keep on working. I just can't do anything with my hands for a living, quote unquote.
But you plan to do a good bit of the restoration on
this
house?
I've already started it. My wife and I have already
done a number of
things in the house in the short year that we've been here. We are working on a couple of projects right now. One of them is in one of the upstairs rooms over the living room. The realtor when we bought the house called it a ballroom, so it sort of stuck. But it's not a ballroom. I don't want that gives a whole impression of something else, and it's not the case at all. But what it was when the house was built was a meeting room. The house often was a meeting place for some of the town's administrative people. We had heard. And looked in some of the history of the town, and church services were sometimes held in the house here. And this particular room that was used as the meeting room had a, like a lot of the rooms in the house, has a wide pine floor. But this particular room had quite a bit of damage under the floor. It was more than the usual dings and things that make a house have character. There were some places that needed to be pulled up and new wood, quote-unquote, new, but other wood put down.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a difficult time finding the one-inch plank boards that they used back then.
I bet you did.
And to have those things milled would have cost a fortune.
Yeah, it sure would.
One of the things we came up with was to take 3/4-inch wide stock pine, and we also took a 1/4-inch plywood. We put the plywood down as a base in the areas that we were replacing the planks, and we put the planks over it, and it was a perfect fit. I mean, you'd never know it. So that's working out okay. We're at the stage now where we're actually going to put a finish on the floor.
That's a big project right there.
That is. And my neighbor next door has been helping us. We have paid him to do some things, and he and I have worked on some other things along with my wife. My wife right now is stripping a fireplace in this same room. The house has 5 fireplaces in it.
Wow, man.
The one in this particular room has, I think we counted, 10 coats of paint so far that have come off of this thing.
Yeah.
We're actually exposing intricacies of the molding that were not seen with all the paint on it.
Yeah, man.
So she's very diligent. She's quite talented herself. She is an avid gardener. She does a lot of crafts, and she's a decorative painter. So she is diligently working on stripping this fireplace.
I got a couple single friends. Does she have a sister?
she's an only child, actually.
Only child, yeah.
I figured. I always tell her that, there can only be one of her anyway. So.
Yeah, so how much of this floor laying did you do, or did you hire it done, or did you do a lot of it yourself?
Excuse me?
I say this replacing of the wood floor, did you do a lot of that yourself? Or?
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh.
Except for some of the areas, and I'll give you an example. There was one area where the floor, as it came away from the wall, sagged down.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to level off the whole room, we have to actually put jacks in the living room underneath. And of course, that would be unsightly, etc. So what my neighbor has done, and this is where he did most of the work, he actually scribed out the top of a beam that went across this section of the floor. He took out probably 3/4 inch of this beam that went across, and then and we put the flooring on top of that. It's much more level than it was now. So we actually had to lower that section of the floor, and of course he couldn't take the beam out to do it. So he just scribed the beam out.
What happened to cause that that problem?
Just natural sagging, there's an awful lot of weight. Some of the beams in this house are absolutely massive. So just over the years, 200 years of use just caused the floors to sag. Actually, that was the worst one in the house. Most of the floors are in pretty good shape.
Now this was a downstairs room.
No, this was upstairs.
This oh, this was
in that
upstairs.
Same room.
Wow.
That we call the ballroom. We affectionately call it the ballroom.
And it's these massive beams running across to hold up the. How big is this room? I don't think you told us that.
I would say the room is probably 20 by 20.
Really?
It's a pretty big room.
I wonder if you could, Charles, give us maybe an idea. What's the approximate square footage of the house? Well, I know it's 2-story, but say the footprint, the bottom floor.
It's approximately 4,700 square feet.
Good Lord. Whoa.
This is the bottom? I mean, minus the...
That's both stories.
Including the basement and everything?
No, that's not the basement.
Oh, that's just 4,700 square feet for the first and second floor.
Yes.
Wow.
Good Lord.
Man.
And so
yeah,
we talking...
It's a big house. Without counting the bathrooms and such, there are 17 rooms.
High ceilings, 12 foot, or...
I'd say 10 feet. There are a couple of rooms, couple of the bedrooms where in the past owners have lowered the ceilings, and we're going to take that out. We're going to take that out and go back to the original height.
Yeah, I know, but that was fashionable.
They probably wanted to keep most of the acoustical tile down at eight feet. But I'm in the living room right now. I'm walking around as I'm talking. I'm a great one for doing that. I don't stay in one place when I talk on the phone.
Sounds like myself.
And I'm in the living room now, and this room has I'd say 10-foot ceilings in it. And most of the rooms, especially in the older part of the house, do.
Well, Phil and me have talked about naming rooms before, and boy, I can see why you'd want to if you had a house that big with that many rooms. You'd want to name them to.
You know, actually, we didn't plan on buying a house like this. I mean, it just kind of happened. We wanted to buy a house close to where we work, which is in a town about 20 miles from here. And both my wife and I work for an independent living center in this town. We both work in the human services area.
Mm-hmm.
She's a community advocate, and I'm a systems advocate there. And although I only work part-time and she works full, we go into work together and so on and so forth. And we originally were looking for a home in that area so that we'd have very little traveling time. But we couldn't find anything that, A, we could afford, B, had some property with it, at least something bigger than a 50 by 100-foot lot.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because I wanted to have some place to throw up some antennas for my ham radio interest.
Yep.
KA5UWO here.
And in 5GBI.
What's that? I'm having trouble hearing you now, guys.
They gave me their ham
call signs.
Do it again.
Call signs. Okay, I missed that. I'm WA2OEK. So we were looking, you know, for a house that had some property, that was kind of an older home, but, you know, we weren't looking for anything elaborate or anything.
Uh-huh.
We couldn't afford that to begin with. But so we continued to search, and our circle got wider and wider and wider, and finally we ended up about 20 miles away, and we found this house. And my wife actually saw it on the Internet.
What a deal.
And she looked at it, she says, that's a mansion.
It sounds like a mansion.
No kidding.
Man. It's really not a mansion. It's just, you know, it's a good size.
Well, I'll tell you what, I have a cruise book for this year. That's going to be our fall vacation. Next fall, a year from this fall, we are coming to do New England, and I'm going to come look at your house.
That would be great. That would be wonderful if you guys...
We're going to take the show on the road, Charlie, and we're coming up there.
That sounds great. I can show you on the project site.
Yeah, that would be... So you worked on this...
A couple of years ago, I put up a ceiling fan
in
the room that I use as my radio room. And that was really a piece of cake to do. I mean, assembling the thing was nothing. And
we're going
to
talk about that.
Tell me what the color of the wires were, because that's an ongoing problem. We're trying to find out what colors wires are, or having somebody to read the dipstick when you change the oil or check the oil. I mean, I could take an engine apart and put it back together, but I can't check the oil. You know,
it's
really quite something.
You'd think there'd be by now a talking dipstick, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
You would think so.
Yeah.
I know several.
Well, yeah. Okay, I hadn't thought about it. I bet we probably know the same one. None of them are here in this room, are they? Are on the
no, absolutely
no.
Not.
Okay. No way.
So, and you put up a ceiling fan, but it's 10 feet above you, so it's a long way up there, isn't there? What do you have, an 8-foot stepladder?
Yes, absolutely.
Yep.
That was one of the first purchases we made was an 8-foot stepladder.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got to buy one. My staircase on my little garage that I go up above the garage is broken, so I'm not going to replace it. I'm just going to buy a stepladder. Okay, what are some of the other things you have done or plan to do with this house?
Let's see. I mentioned the floor in the ballroom.
Uh-huh.
My wife is doing she's stripping the fireplace.
Uh-huh.
And the reason she's doing it is because there's so many intricacies there. I don't have a steady enough hand. I feel that I would scrape right through some of the more.
Yeah, and you couldn't. It'd be hard for you to do that because you couldn't tell when you were down to natural wood.
Yeah. So if I could use some steel wool or something and some paint remover, you know, I'll go that far with stripping, but I won't really take a scraper in my hand unless I'm working on something like clapboard, okay, which is a project for me that's coming up. There are a number of places on the house where the clapboard siding is either slightly buckled or it's rotted or it's split,
mm-hmm.
and there's a piece here and there, and I plan on taking those out and replacing them with new clapboard. Which is going to be an interesting project, but it should be fairly easy because all one has to do, assuming that the wood comes out without breaking apart, all one would have to do is, take the old piece of wood, put it up to the new one, and make your mark. You don't even have to measure; just measure by comparison, and you know, put your mark on the wood and you know, get the old skill saw going, and that should take care of that. So I really shouldn't have too much of a problem replacing the clapboard.
Now, I'm not absolutely
painting it. That's another matter. I can get paint on the wood, but whether it's all covered is questionable, and smoothly covered is questionable.
I'm not absolutely sure that I know what clapboard is. Is
clapboard
it
is wood siding. It's it has maybe a 4 or 5 inch exposure. They're long boards. They're probably, well, like 4 or 5 inch exposure, and they're probably, you know, I don't know, 6 or 8 feet long. So think of it as shingles on a house, but they're made of wood.
Okay, and a little bit of them overlap at the top and at the bottom?
A little bit. They overlap at, yeah, they overlap at the top.
The top. At the top.
The top one goes, the one above it goes, gets nailed into the top.
I know exactly what it is. I know exactly, and you can buy it in several different, not lengths, but widths.
Widths, yes.
Yeah. Okay. It's like the siding we put on the Sunset House. Remember when we went and did that?
Cedar Shakes.
Yeah, it's not Cedar Shakes, I mean, but I understand what you're talking about.
You put it up the same way you would put it up.
I understand what you're talking about. And you'll tack that on with a nail gun? Or actually use a hammer?
I'll probably use a hammer on that. So,
yeah,
I don't have a nail gun. It's a small one. I don't have.
Oh, you don't have the big Duofast nail gun?
No, not yet.
Big nail gun.
Oh,
damn. I don't have a table saw yet. That's another thing on my list.
You need a table saw.
Need a table saw.
I definitely need one. I used to have one, but that disappeared with some other things, and that's another whole.
You've been divorced too, then, right? I just checking out. Checking out.
Yeah.
I lost my Slim Whitman records in one of my divorces. It was pretty, pretty sad and pretty tragic. I still haven't gotten over it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm rebuilding my tool collection now.
Yeah, I know.
Most of it got wiped out.
And what's she going to do with all those tools?
That was my question.
Who knows, you know, but they wanted them.
That was my question.
They want them. So,
yeah, I never could figure that out. My ex-wife wanted my ham radio, and she hated it.
Yeah.
Well, she just anything to get back at you. And that's probably what the case was with me. I'm sure my wife took the tools the next day and sold them.
I got my divorce was because of illness. She was sick of me. It was the whole thing. Well, it sounds like you are going to have a pretty interesting time, and lots of if you have the energy to do all these projects, that would be another thing.
I do if I just take it slow. You know,
yeah.
I figure I have all the time. You know, I have from now and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, they don't have to get done tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I'll just work on them, you know, as we go along here. One of the bigger projects that I've got coming up on the back of the house is a woodshed, probably 400 square feet.
Good heavens!
And that's the room I'm going to have my shop set up in. And right now though, it needs some work. It needs some clapboard replaced. And but the biggest thing is that one of the sill plate running along the back wall is rotted. I don't know whether insects got at it.
You're talking about the plate at the bottom of
yes.
the. Okay.
So we're going to have to pull that off.
Man.
And redo that. And that's going to be a big project. I'm certainly not going to tackle that one by myself.
And the studs are sitting on that plate.
Yes,
and
they
so
are.
And so you're going to have to rebuild that whole wall.
Get that house jack.
Those are in good shape. Everything from the you know, top of the plate up is fine. It's just the plate itself.
Man, what it is.
No kidding.
We're going to tackle that one. My neighbor and I are going to do it, and I'm sure I'll learn a great deal on that project.
Oh, yeah. You could count on that.
Go ahead, Pat.
No, I just had one other question, kind of maybe when we wrap it up. I wanted to ask. I know in old cars, you had talked about getting this on the historical register. I thought it might be kind of interesting to know how much of it has to be authentic. How much can you modify and change, or you might tell us about the rules about that?
Well, quite frankly, I don't know a whole lot about the rules, and this is something that my wife and I are exploring now. The house, I know, has to be authentic as much as possible. I mean, they don't want you ripping out walls and putting up, you know, modern framing and wallboard where there was no framing before,
mm-hmm.
You know, and putting on modern additions on the house. I think you can do a certain amount of drywall in the house if the lath and plaster are really bad. But to actually alter the house and make it appear different than it did when it was originally built is something that you can't do. So there is some leeway. But I'm like I said, I'm double checking into this because some people say, well, you can't put vinyl siding on a historic house, and other people say, well, you know, you're able to do that because it protects the you know, the original siding underneath. So, you know, I don't really know what the rules are.
So you don't want to use vinyl siding anyway.
No, we don't. The only thing that vinyl siding offers is some maintenance. Some lessening of maintenance, painting, and so on. But other than that, it.
I wanted to get back, if you don't mind, for just a second to this plate that's bad. I don't know how you're gonna. Of course, everybody has ideas, but you might get above it, above the plate, and actually put some little blocks between the studs, like fire block it, mm-hmm. to keep for stability reasons. And then, you know, that's going to be.
We talked about doing that and talked about doing the plate basically a section at a time.
Yeah, okay.
Cutting out the whole plate, but doing the section so that we don't lose the major support of the whole beam, you know.
And it is a support wall.
Yes, it is. Oh, yes.
Oh, boy. That's what sort of floor? This woodshed is just a dirt floor?
No, it's there's framing and... planking over it.
So you're going to have a 400 square foot shop?
Yeah, it's about 22 by 22.
Good.
That's
nice.
That's good size. Those out there.
Well, a 17 room house and a 400 square foot shop. What more could a guy want?
Really?
It really is kind of heaven around here.
Your county's not dry or anything, is it?
What's that?
I say your county's not dry, is it?
No, it's not.
He may not know what that means.
Yes, he knows what that means.
No, we definitely have some cold ones in the fridge. We're working on some of these.
That's good. You pretty much got it.
We have some cold ones in the fridge, but we're not working on projects too.
Don't forget, we're taking the show on the road, Charlie.
Well, you guys are welcome to come up here.
I think what we'll do is give you a few weeks or months, maybe, and.
Yeah, update.
And get an update from you.
Yeah, I'd really like to come back because there's so much I haven't even gotten into yet. We've been spending more time talking about my house than about some other things which I'd really like to talk about.
Other things like what? Like what other things?
Basically how I would approach a project and how I measure things and some of the tools I use or don't use and all that kind of thing.
Well, I tell you what, you want to do next week's show?
Why don't we have somebody else do next week?
Save you a couple weeks
and give a fair chance to others. Yeah. And I'll come back for sure.
We'll save you a few weeks and call you back. How would that be?
Absolutely.
Well, thank you for participating and good luck. And sounds like you got it made. Sounds like you don't have a swimming pool, do you?
No, we don't.
Do you want one? We have two or three here we're trying to get rid of. Listen, thank you, Charles, and we'll talk to you in a week or two, okay?
Well, thank you, gentlemen, so much for having me on. I really appreciate it, and looking forward to doing it again.
Very good. We'll take a little short break and be back and talk about replacing or fixing your hot water heater. Be back in just a minute. I'm Houston, Don Shaw, Don Patterson, I'm Phil Parr.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about hot water heaters, Donald Shaw. Well, that's kind of your subject, so go.
Okay. Well, if you turn on the water and bingo, you got warm water instead of hot water. Say, man, I've got a big problem here, Tom Houston.
Uh-oh.
What do you do, huh?
You just scream.
Well, if you've got an electric hot water heater, that's what I want to talk about today. Actually, an electric hot water heater. Right. And probably half of the folks have probably got electric or more than half. Anyway, the first thing I would do is, if you do have that problem, is most likely what you've got is a bad element. Maybe both elements are out. You know, it varies. Could be one or the other, both. And usually if you go in and change one, it's better just to do both. It's just better. It's no more expensive than it is just do both of them at the same time. And before you get started, we're going to do this in order this week. You've got to shut the water off and drain the hot water heater before we go any further.
There we go.
And turn off the power, too. Just do all of it.
And you might add at this point that most, I'm certain that all, but we'll say most because never say all, 40 or 50-gallon hot water heaters have two elements, top and bottom. So.
Yeah, and that's a good point. You get into the small little under the cabinet hot water heaters, probably got one, but most of the other ones, that's right, probably going to have two to deal with. So put a water hose, hook up a water hose to the bottom drain of the hot water heater, and by this time you're going to have your water to the house shut off. And usually, Don, haven't you heard that you should open like one faucet somewhere in the house?
I would open the cold water side.
Yeah.
And also get your can of WD-40 that I mentioned last week to squirt on that valve, that drain valve, because it's probably been sitting there 15 years.
It's probably been sitting there a while. That's right.
And not really. And so squirt that a couple of hours ahead of time.
Yeah. And make sure it's free. And shut off the water and open that valve and drain that hot water heater, boy. Got to do it. No choice. You open it. If you open it and you don't, you're definitely going to have a wet problem there.
You're going to have a mess, right?
Yeah, going to have a large mess, depending on where it's at. But anyway, I'll drain it and make sure that the water's out, or make sure it is at least below the bottom element. And what I'd recommend is, and there's several ways to do it, there's going to be two wires hooked to the element. And I'd take... unloosen the screws, take off these wires, and I would just bend one back on each side so you'll kind of know how they go back. And there's several different tools you can use, but I would recommend going down to your hardware store before you start this project again and buying. They make a socket wrench just for these elements. And in other words, you put the end of the socket wrench over the element, then you'd put a screwdriver through the other end of the socket wrench to be able to turn it with. It's just a little... Have you seen those, Don, those little sockets that you buy for the elements? They're the easiest.
I have not.
You can use vice grips or you could use some other type of wrenches, but really the sockets, it's worth having. And one other thing I didn't mention is before you get down to the element, usually on the hot water heater, for the partially sighted folks, there's going to be a black cover, top and bottom. Usually it'll have either two or four screws in it that you got to take out first. Push back a little insulation, kind of getting ahead of myself, and then you will feel the element with the two wires running to it.
And then so do you take the wires off first?
Take the wires off first.
And then get down to this where you need this little wrench.
Then you'll be down to where you need the special little socket wrench to unscrew the element out of the hot water heater.
Does it matter where you start, top or bottom?
No, it doesn't matter which one you start with.
Okay.
And when you pull the element out, how long is this? What are we looking at? Kind of a U-shape?
It makes a loop. It goes back in the hot water heater probably 8 inches or so, and it goes back in on one side, makes a loop, comes back out.
Okay.
It's just like a long loop, really.
And are these standard, or like do you need to take your old one in for the particular hot water heater, or is like a Sears hot water heater or a Maytag or a...
I understand they're pretty much standard.
Standard, okay.
Compare one brand same as the other. Now they do. I think they make different different wattage elements. So that might be the only thing. You're either going to have to get someone to look or take it with you to find out how many watts the elements are on your particular heater.
Okay. And so it's your contention that you change both. So we've gotten in and now we've taken the wires off and we've used our wrench.
Yep.
And we're taking the old ones out. And after you, how many bolts hold this in? How many screws?
Just one. It just screws in.
Okay.
It's just like one giant. That's why you really need their little socket wrench. It's just
wrench.
Like one big thing that screws into this hole inside of the hot water heater.
Okay. If you have warm water, okay, you say the water's warm, so you check it and one of the elements are out. Should you replace both elements, could you do one?
You could do one, but since you're into it, you might as well do both, and you're not really going to know which one actually may be out without, you know, at least a partially sighted person, you know, that has a tester, you know, a voltmeter could test it. You don't see which one is out.
I've heard that normally it's the top one.
I've heard normally it's the top one.
It goes first.
That goes
but
first.
I agree with you. If
but if you're into it
project,
anyway, it's a big project. Yeah. I mean, not a big project, but it's a project. If you got to drain the hot water here anyway, they're not expensive. You might as well do both.
Yeah, what are we talking about? $20 a piece?
If that much.
If that much.
If that
for,
much.
For the elements.
So.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually a fairly...
Yeah, but how would you know which one was bad? I mean, is there any way
well,
to tell?
We just said that it's probably better to change it's both while you're in,
yeah,
or have a voltmeter. You know, if you had a voltmeter, you could tell which one was out.
In other words, you didn't... Well, of course, you know, the Radio Shack made a talking voltmeter.
They sure did. I'd seen one back years ago.
I have
actually
a couple of them. One of them works, but anyway, if you and so as long as you've drained, because if you didn't get the right one, then you got to start over and drain the hot water heater.
And drain it. And if you're going, you know, you might as well if you're going to drain it, might as well just do them both.
Email address is
blindhandyman@hotmail.com.
And if you're listening, please email us and let us know, and we'll clap our little handyman hand.
And if you've bought an old house, keep it to yourself.
So let us know. Whatever you're doing, whatever kind of project you got, let us know. If you have a question, we'll try to. And for the guy who couldn't keep his connection connected, clean your cache in your computer, and your computer will probably stay connected.
Yep.
That's Phil Parr's computer tip for the day.
Computer tip of the day.
Thank you, gentlemen. Don Patterson, Don Shaw, Tom Hughes.
Bye. Bye.
I'm Phil Parr. We'll see you next week on The Blind Handyman. Blind men saying, I see, said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw.